Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
March Madness, baby! I'm doing good!
It is, in fact, March Madness. We will talk about the NCAA tournament a little bit later in the show. Not so much, you know, teams and who's going to win, but just sort of larger thoughts. You know, David, it's, you know, March Madness for the NBA as well, in that, you know, March is the last full month of basketball, and then we got, you know, 8-9 days in April, and then it's play-in and playoff. So yeah, it's, teams are jockeying for position now. I mean, Boston is the only team that's kind of like, and you know, obviously the teams that are not going to make the playoffs are already eliminated. Boston's kind of like, they're already on easy street. Playoffs berth clinched. They are, I want to say, 9 games up right now. Let me check the standings. Boston is 11. I mean, barring some catastrophic thing, they're not getting caught. They're going to cruise to that one seed, and they can start, as you mentioned a few weeks ago, start resting players. You'll start seeing the second unit, which is going to give them, I think, such a huge advantage come the postseason. But David, you know, on the more sinister side of things, something we hear at True Hoop, you know, we discussed internally, and we think we made it public a while back, that we, as a media company, were not going to take any money from the sports gambling sites. And we see that, you know, in an age and in a world where capitalism is the machine that drives everything, you are a company, your constant mission and goal is to keep making profits, and not just little, it's like record profits year over year over year over year. And what happens with that is that your sources of cash that you need to infuse into your business get smaller and smaller, because there's only so many pools of money out there. And right now for sports leagues, the gambling companies have deep pockets right now. And you see it everywhere. I mean, the NBA announced earlier this week that in the NBA League Pass app, they will allow you to allow users, when they're watching the game, to make their bets just on the click of their phone through their app. And, you know, this has so many potential red flags and disasters for this league and for sports as a whole. And so I kind of wanted to talk about it a little bit today on the show. And we can look at it from a couple different areas, right? From the media standpoint, from the league itself, the players, coaches, and then, of course, the fans. So let's start first talking about it from a media standpoint. David, you know, again, we don't take any money from FanDuel, Sports, DraftKings, or any of those other sites. And because of that, that allows us to have conversations like this, open and honest, and tell the truth. And unfortunately, a lot of our peers can't say the same.
Well, let's be fair. If a gambling company had offered us $1 million each or something like that, I don't know what we would have said.
Correct.
That was never a situation.
Correct.
I have, I stopped gambling on college games. I mean, when I would gamble, it would be spring break when I was, you know, 25 or 30. And I knew some of the college coaches. And so I followed it pretty closely. I just stay away from it. I'd probably be pretty good at it, by the way, if I did. But I like playing blackjack just fine when I go to gamble. I don't do it very often, but if I do, it's fun. I am highly sensitive to what you're describing, what you're going to get into today, as someone who does deal with these athletes on literally a daily basis, and their families and their agents and spouses and so forth. I think as a country and as even as a population, as a species, it's a real issue. And I worry that we can't even really always imagine what just how dark things can get. Right now, it doesn't seem that way, but we all have seen how social media has impacted the way our country connects and the world connects. I think gambling can be some problematic too.
Without question. Unintended consequences, right? Because in the short term, we see the gain, which is the money. In the long term, I mean, we have no idea what it's going to look like in 5-10 years, right? And the idea, with it being so readily available, David, and with the younger generation, they're native to their phones, right? This is how they've lived their entire life.
Yep.
So the more and more that allows for younger children to get caught up in that at a much earlier than they probably, you know, than most of their parents would like them to get involved when it was something like that. And we've seen it already. In college sports, a number of, I want to say, Iowa State football players got in trouble, or Iowa, excuse me, for betting on their own games. And so that was an issue. Iowa State. And in the NFL, a bunch of players have been suspended for gambling. Right now, in Major League Baseball, I don't know if you heard this story, Shohei Ohtani's interpreter, something's going on where millions of dollars were funneled to a Southern California bookie. So that's a thing to worry about.
He was accused of, arrested of theft, I think.
Yes, that's what they're saying. But now it's like, well, but did the dude not know? So, okay, so you got that to worry about. In college baseball, Alabama's head coach was feeding info to a friend who was then placing bets on Alabama games. I mean, we know this. And look, let's not kid ourselves. The NBA, who we talk about, obviously, on this show, they are not that far removed from the Tim Donaghy scandal. So it's just, there are all these landmines that are just sitting here and waiting to blow up. And this week we had two different NBA actors sort of make comments about this. Tyrese Halliburton first, and Jamie Bickerstaff, head coach of the Cavaliers. Tyrese talked about, you know, being seen literally as a prop, and you know, everyone ran with that because, you know, prop bets, but it's like, no, literally, truthfully, you can't imagine the amount of players. Cause I mean, David, you're around players. Obviously you talk to them all the time. I'm around them and I hear what fans say to them. The amount of times it starts with, I need you to do X for this thing that I have going on, or my fantasy team, or, and it's just like, what the hell? Like, and some people are serious. Like, you know, it's one thing if you're like a dollar, like who the hell cares, but people betting large sums of money that for them are impactful, their rent, their mortgage, whatever, dangerous things. And then Jamie Bickerstaff came out yesterday before the game against the Heat and said that some gamblers got his telephone number and they were sending me crazy messages about where I live and my kids and that stuff. So it's dangerous. It's a dangerous game and a fine line that we're walking for sure. David, I would listen, and JB is probably just doing his, you know, coach speak, and you know, when you've been rehearsed in front of the media, you certain cliches and things just come out of your mouth naturally because they talk to the media 1,000 times a day. The idea that it's a fine line we're walking for sure. I'm sorry. When you're being called and people are talking about your kids and where you live because of betting, not fine line, line crossed, and we are down a bad dark path.
Gambling has always been part of sports in from a personal standpoint. When I was in college and would play, first of all, almost everyone in my frat was betting on college football and basketball games, not college basketball, college football, only college football. And NFL. I did some $5. Mm-hmm. I, by 2 years in, I stopped doing it. And, it wasn't legal, by the way. Mm-hmm. I would play pickup basketball in the projects and there was lots of gambling going on. Some teams wanted us to win, some didn't. Luckily, nothing ever ugly happened. I was coaching high school basketball, and one of the very first times I coached a game in an inner city school, two great teams, lots of good players. And I heard fans yelling at our players about, you got to make the next shot, Foster, and whatever. I was so surprised at that. And then in a big game on the road in a tournament, we were playing the home team, the host team of the tournament. I may have told this story before. And a game went overtime. And some dude walked down. He was wearing a trench coat. It was cold outside. It was in Ocala, Florida. He dropped a gun right on the floor in our huddle. We got the hint. We lost in a few overtimes. We got screwed by the refs. But It's always been there. So now we get to today, where you cannot turn your head and open your eyes and not see an advertisement. And so it's just the breadth, this depth and the scope of this is there. And as someone who does, you know, do what I do with these players, it's something I've never talked about it with them once. They've never talked about it to me once. I don't know if it's because it just isn't something they're thinking about, or they're afraid. God, if I say it out loud, what does that mean? It's a weird time for that. And I'm so glad Tyrese and JB did what they did, because it is pervasive. We're not going to fix it. We're not going to make sure we don't have it be a problem by ignoring the potential for the problem. I need to be more aware of it for my guys, and make sure their agents are, hey, are you getting threats ever? That kind of thing. If you have a bad game, I don't even notice it, and it's in front of me. You can't watch a game at halftime of every game. They show you the prop bets.
Forget halftime, David. The announcers give you a lot in the middle of the game, tell you what the plus minus is. Like, you know, what the line of the game is.
Yeah, that's true. I always notice, just as you going into the second half, they'll put up their three prop bets. You know, so-and-so is supposed to score, you know, 18 points. He's already got 12. Maybe they're asking for, because you can do second half bets too.
Yep.
I don't do any of it. I worry. As someone who does go to Vegas twice a year typically, we see an awful lot of young people gambling, and I don't know how they have their money. I know my kids ain't going to do it. I'm damn sure not going to fund them for it. And habits are built when you're young. It's a concern. And I should say this too. I didn't mention this before. I've coached lots of high school kids who would tell me when they had terrible coaches, they would be betting on games, not their own game. They'd be betting on, like, they'd look at the NBA schedule for the week, and they'd be in the locker room betting on games right then, you know, someone writing it down, whatever. Like, it's just not good. We've definitely talked to our kids about it, something you stay away from. And here we are embracing it the way we are as a culture. It's concerning. Someone's going to get hurt at some point. There's always speculation about Jordan's family, Jordan's dad, who knows. Something's going to happen. And the stress these guys feel is already there. That's why Tyrese said he feels like a prop bet, because he had been really struggling and no one cares. They only care that he helped them lose money, right? So that is, we're heading to a car crash at some point, right? Or a plane crash.
Yeah. And, you know, the idea that, you know, people think, all right, you know, these top end NBA guys, all the money they make, who cares? And it's like, look, man, there are many people beyond the superstar elite players making $40, $50, $60 million that are involved in this game. There are coaches. There are equipment managers. There are people privy to information and all types of
video coordinators,
who are not at the top of the food chain, okay, economically. And if you're telling, listen, you'd be surprised, not you, but the larger you would be surprised at what people will do for the chance at getting a quick score at money, okay? And that's the mentality, that's what it taps into. Of course, the reality of all this is that in gambling, the house is going to win the majority of the time, right? You've got your few super sharp insider types like Haralabob and people like that who have but they've got complex algorithms and systems and that work that. Most people are going to lose, right? That's how it works. That's how they're able to build a billion. Listen, they're not destroying casinos in Vegas. They keep building new ones for a reason.
Unless they have a certain person who owned it.
Correct. Unless, they got bought out by somebody and that's an ugly thing and they're building it, changing it and doing a new thing. But the point remains, the people who are in this business are in it because they're making tons of money. And again, we are, as David said, we are headed towards something bad. And listen, we get no excitement out of, we told you, it's not about that. We love this sport and we are worried about its future on several levels. And this one is one that does not sit well with us at all right now. And I don't know where we go, David, because with the gambling on the one end and with the takeover of sport by the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund, I mean, this is where we are. We are in bed with bad faith actors and nefarious sources of money. And I don't know. It is what it is.
So, so it is what it is, but I would just tell you, people like me, I have to do a better job with my guys making sure We've got systems in places where our players feel protected and safe and focus on playing the right way and playing to win and all those kind of things, which is what we talk about with them all the time. I was talking to an agent this morning just about that competitive fire that you're supposed to feel. He's a dad and he's a little league coach. And I was telling him a story about how I knew my son was probably going to be a college athlete in baseball or basketball. He wasn't playing basketball yet, because when all of our other dumbass 9 and 10 year old kids couldn't wait to run the left field to meet with the team and get their silly snacks, I actually banned snacks. I'm so sick of it, which is, yeah, I was that dad. I was that coach. My son, who played his ass off, was by far our best player, bawling his eyes out when we lost like a big tournament game. It was Little League, so I didn't care about winning a Little League. He did. And it's supposed to hurt when you lose. I was talking to this agent about, like, the league is full of those guys that just want to win. And I don't want to pollute that. So we have to make sure we make that our players feel safe to do just that. It's why you hear me complain about the oohing and aahing when you break a guy down off the dribble and he falls down or you get dunked on. Anything that suppresses that competitive spirit is bad for the game. And I don't want them thinking about anything else but that. The fans can do what they want to do. We need to make sure we protect our players in that bubble, so to speak. We built a bubble to avoid the virus. We need to do the same thing. The NBA, I need to do my part. Agents have to do their part. Coaches and teams have to do their part. The league has to do their part to make sure our players feel protected. The outside world does not matter. The game is the same as it's been. Let's focus on that.
Yeah, ultimately, that's what it's about, right? It's the game. And, you know, thankfully here at True Hoop, that's why, you know, you guys come here and you support us, is because we're going to give you the truth, right? We're going to talk about the game and we're going to say, hey, these are the areas that we need to talk about and be concerned of, because this is impacting this game we all love so very much. Speaking about the game and what's exciting, David had a piece just come out on TrueHoop.com. Everyone should be a subscriber. The five players on the brink, and it's exciting because, you know, they're names that people, you know, basketball fans know, but, you know, what you get in this article is David's big brain breakdown of what he's seeing from these players. And I loved it because Naz Reid, of course, is mentioned, and we talked about this when the Cat injury happened. You know, I say this all the time, by some teams you have, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, right? If an injury didn't happen, you probably wouldn't figure things out because coaches are going to do what they've been doing. Well, no Cat. Somebody's got to play that position. Well,
right.
We got Naz, right? And Naz is starting to show off parts of his game, and that's good for Minnesota in the long run, potentially. Or at the worst case, at the very least, it's very good for Naz Reid, right? Wherever he ends up playing his basketball. And then we talked about players who have a potential to be Drew Holiday, Derek White type players who, you listen to this podcast, know we talk about the phrase impacting winning. And, you know, one of the great joys of working with David is being around him and trying to watch the game how he watches it, and spending more time, as I do now, watching things away from the ball or watching something like screen navigation, right? And Derek White, Drew Holiday, and Andrew Nembhard, the young player, second year. Are among the best players in the league at just navigating screens, one, and or not getting screened. And it's, when I watch that, I'm like, damn, you guys are like, not only are they obviously physically tough and all things you have to be to navigate screens, they're also smart about knowing when it's coming, where it's coming from, how to angle themselves in the right way to still stay attached to their guy. That stuff, as much as watching somebody, you know, pull up for a crazy shot or whatever, that stuff is like, that's amazing, right? It's really, really cool to watch that. And this article, David, you really went into some depth about some of those guys. Let's talk about Andrew a little bit and his screen navigation and the responsibility Carlisle gave him at such a young, as a rookie. All right, you go guard Giannis. You go guard some of these elite apex predator dudes in the league.
Yeah. So I did. The article is, I'm not saying there's only five guys. I don't think you suggested that.
No.
But these are five guys that I think can really break through next year. All-star potential, all-league potential. Suggs, for example.
All defense.
Mm-hmm. If he doesn't get all defense this year, he'll get it next year. He might get it this year. So maybe I'm a year late on Jalen Suggs. In Nembhard's case, I put him in there because I was watching. I mean, I know Andrew well. I watch a lot of tape on the Pacers, and his defense is just it's breathtaking. I love Jalen Suggs. It's different. His defense is different. He's more of a chaos creator, and his instincts are amazing with that. And the Magic are playing amazing defense. That's my pick for
top five coach of the year.
Yeah, I love what Jamal's done. And Suggs is really in shooting better too. So now he's really coming. He's arrived. Nembhard's defense is just incredible. Last night they're playing Cade Cunningham, Detroit, and Cade's tall, but not really a great shooter and finisher, but he can get whatever he wants. And so Andrew's making it super tough on him, but he's scoring. And second half comes out and nothing changes. Nembhard just dogs him and dogs him and dogs him. And Cunningham misses 10 straight shots and ends up having a very negative EPM for the game. When he was killing in the first half, Andrew's relentless and he's just so strong and he's super fast. And I write about both he and Suggs have such great recovery speed. And in Suggs' case, he's so competitive that he wants to contest everything you shoot. Not everyone does that, Gerard. In fact, most guys don't.
Don't, no.
Suggs takes it personally. And so I love, so he and Nembhard both are that way. I got to tell you about Naz Reid, though. So he's a right-handed player.
Yep.
But we didn't put this in the article. I don't think legally, copyright-wise, we could have. There's an old, do you remember The Far Side?
Of course.
So yeah, I was, my 20s when it came out. And there's a great one where there's two teams, like in the huddle of a timeout. And one of the teams has their five guys. And, he very often, Gary Larson, the pictures, the faces were pretty dumb looking people. This is so great, Gerard. So there's this five dudes, and their coach is saying, hey, Jones, make sure you get that left hand up. And the guy's like, got an enormous left hand, like the size of a person on just his left hand, right? Every other thing is normal. And so watch Naz Reid play. His left hand is unbelievable. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's not just finishing at the rim. He doesn't shoot threes and free throws with it. But around the rim, he's amazing left-handed. But defensively, it's like that guy from Far Side. He's always looking to block a shot with his left hand. But he also can block with his right hand. So he's ambidextrous shot blocker, especially with that left. He also can put it down and make plays. They just don't do it very much with him. But it's in his game. He's fast. His motor's great. He was undrafted. To your point, whether it's Minnesota or someone else, Naz is saying to the world, hey, I'm a real scorer here. He reminds me, I didn't write this because he's better than him, but Montrezl Harrell went through some years as like sixth man of the year kind of guy. Mm-hmm. This guy's way better defensively, moves much better than Montrez, and should be a starter. He just isn't starting above Rudy and Kat now. But I'd love to see him in Indiana as a five if Miles Turner's not the long-term answer, which I wrote. Ooh. Yeah. I really like him. I'm a fan of those guys. And Jabari Smith I wrote about too.
Yeah. You mentioned in the piece about Naz that he is getting something that most undrafted players don't get, which is oxygen and the opportunity to develop and show their game, right? When you are an undrafted person or a second rounder or whatever, it's basically, hey, man, you better defend, whatever the things that are going to keep you. Don't worry about anything else and do that. Whereas lottery picks get to do whatever they want, basically, and keep getting chances to try to develop. But having someone like him do that is amazing. And that goes into teams and team building and player development, which you often say the NBA is terrible at.
Yeah. Yeah. The NBA in general, there are teams that specifically do a good job. You got to play. You got to get a chance to play to show your thing. Coaches matter too. So look at Houston. With Jabari Smith Jr. Actually, Jalen Green would talk about him. He's improving. But Jabari Smith Jr., I liked him better than Paolo. I still like him better than Paolo. Maybe I'm an idiot. Paolo's very good. Don't get me wrong. Jabari Smith's a better finisher at the rim. I think he's got a better mid-range game. They're both about the same as shooting threes. I think Jabari can be a better defender. I think Paolo's a better passer. I'm sure of it, actually. But Jabari's a willing one. We talked about best player in the world in 5 years. Him and Paolo will be 27, 26. But We probably should have mentioned him. Jabari's got a lot of Durant in him. A lot of Durant.
Yeah.
And seems like the just a great guy. The people I've talked to rave about him as a person. I'm a big fan. And oh, and I wrote about Kuminga too.
And
again, maybe a little late on Kuminga. He's kind of arriving as we see it now. Not shooting well yet. Got to get better. All these guys got to get better at different things. Maybe Suggs. Yeah, even Suggs better with turnovers. Kuminga, though, is he's just kind of understanding, oh, I'm a super athletic dude with great hands. If I just hang around the rim and the defense sucks out to our shooters, I can just score easy buckets. Yeah, that's learning how to play, right? You got to get to where the food's being made to eat. Mm-hmm. And so he's done that. He's this big, athletic, energetic guy that I think we're going to see all these guys. You know, again, as our older players age up and out, who's replacing them? Mm-hmm. Here's Suggs and Nembhard in the backcourt defensively, at least, but also can run a team. Nembhard's passing is sublime.
They've done it in real life. We saw it at Gonzaga.
Right. Exactly. Well, that's if they were together, it'd be even better. That'd be amazing. And I think that would be smart. Jabari Smith is going to be, we see a lot more Durant in him. Kuminga is just the overwhelming wing. And then Naz Reid, I think, is going to start for someone eventually and be a two-way plus player. Yeah.
One of the things you always say is the NBA is a coach's league, as much as it's a player's league, right? The players have to be able to be on the floor, but it's a coach's league. Two different coaches here. Steve Kerr in Golden State and his ability to teach Kuminga, because those two were at odds, right? Early as January, where like he wanted out. Kuminga was like, I'm done listening to this guy. But Kerr showing him how, okay, I know you want to drift out to three, but you are so good with your hands at the rim. If you just hang around here, move towards dunker spot, as you mentioned before, you're going to clean up and eat 3-4 baskets a game just off the strength of just hanging right there. Ime Udoka, a fiery, get in your face, unafraid to challenge his players, right? Mentioned Jabari Smith and Jalen Green. We talk about him as well, the improvement. Talk about like how coaches are able to, the importance of coaches being able to get their message through to their players and actually coach.
I had a coach say to me, text me in the last 2 weeks that if a particular player is humble, we can really help him. And so it starts with that. The player has to be willing to listen, has to be willing to be vulnerable and recognize, well, I got to get better at this. And the coaches have to be brave enough to ask. There's a lot of coaches just won't do it. A lot of assistant coaches don't feel like it's their place. They potentially get fired. If the star wants them out, they're out. And so it's not a healthy place. And the head coaches have to set that up. And I had an agent tell me this morning, he said, you told me a couple weeks ago, it's up to the head coach to figure this out with a particular player of his. They've got to coach the player up. And they've got to coach the teammates up to better accommodate all the things going on. Some coaches just have the wherewithal to do it. Some of them have the gravitas because they've been around and done it a long time, won a championship, whatever. Spoelstra obviously comes to mind. Rick Carlisle, these guys, Pop, they've been around a long time. Other guys just have to say, fuck it. I'm going to get fired either way. I might as well try to coach it then hope for the best and not do it. And that's where I think management comes in. You've got to support the coaches and give them room to really challenge their guys. And when all those things happen, you'll see that progress and teams get better, the players get better.
Jalen Green, what have you liked what you're seeing from him? Because he was someone who you loved his talent, but you had concerns about his willingness to do all things you talk about, be humble, want to work and get better, et cetera.
Yeah, he's starting to rebound a lot now, which is great. It means he's engaged. He's shooting really well, which helps. Mm-hmm. I think you could look it up on Dunks and Threes. I guess I can too. I have a computer too. I just did this earlier. You know, he's in a little string of games here where we've got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 positive games to 3 negative ones, the last 10. But of those 3, 2 of them are basically net neutral games almost. Okay. He's had one really bad game, which happens to everybody. You know, Jokic, they all have it. So he hasn't had any kind of 10-game streak like this before. He scored 42 the other night, tied a career high. But that's not the story. The story is the consistent. This is what the best players do. They just consistently help their team win possessions. And not just on occasion when they're hot. Mm-hmm. And so he seems like he's turning that corner. I'm going to mention Houston in a surprising way later in our show. And so there is something going on there, Gerard, where everyone's forgetting about them. They're not going to win a championship or a playoff series.
Right.
They may not even make the play-in. But there's a galvanizing spirit going on there. If Jalen Green can continue, because he's been flatlining for a couple of years, if he can make progress, and here comes Jabari Smith. Hello, Şengün comes back next year. They are a serious
quality team.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we never had any doubt about Ime's coaching ability, right? I mean, we saw it in Boston, right? There was never any question about that.
No, for sure.
So I think this seems like Houston made a good hire here. All right, folks, we'll be back after a brief commercial. All right, David, something weird happened in the game yesterday. The Clippers and the Blazers. Clippers won that game going away. There's a play where James Harden got the ball to Kawhi Leonard for a three and then raced out to the corner to contest Kawhi shooting three. Why is that strange? Because they're on the same team. So that was kind of bizarre to see. And then after the game, I think Harden said in the post game, you know, I was trying to inject some life into us, you know, because the Clippers, as we talked about, it had been struggling lately. So a little bit of levity or fun. I don't think Ty didn't seem too upset about it, like, after the game. But what did you see on the play? And what did you think immediately when it happened?
So we do, there's a very common drill in basketball. If you have one ball and two players or two ball and three players, it's one man, two ball. It's a one ball, two man shooting, two ball, three man shooting. So let's say you and I are shooting, okay? Mm-hmm. You're behind three. I throw you the ball. I can come out and contest you if I want. I don't have to. It depends on the drill. Mm-hmm. I then reposition. You rebound your own shot, throw it to me. And that's how we get a bunch of shots up with just one ball, okay? Mm-hmm. If I don't have a manager or someone rebounding, that's what we would do.
Right.
I do these things all the time because I'll do things where we work on one-hand passing with our weak hand, right? But there's also plenty of times where the players are fucking around and they go block the guy's shot because they're having fun. That's exactly what I think James was doing. Is it was already a 20-point game, I believe.
Yep.
They knew the other team had surrendered. Like, mm-hmm. it wasn't going to be a competitive game. And I just think James was having some fun. Like, because he threw it to him on the move.
Yes.
Exactly like you're doing one ball, two-man shooting. Yeah. So I think it was just having fun. I think they've not been playing with joy of late.
No.
They have been bored. And I think he was just trying to shake the boredom.
And yeah, and that's essentially what he said in the post game. And, you know, we can't stress this enough. Like, that 82-game season, it's a grind, guys. And it is long. I mean, look, it's March and we still have 14 games to go. Like, I mean, it's just a lot. And when you're a vet, especially, and you've been doing this for 10-plus seasons, it's like it literally is Groundhog Day. You're just like, oh, my God, please just get me to something more entertaining and fun and exciting. So, yeah, I like it. I think it's cool. I didn't see any of the Twitter reaction. I'm very curious to see what that happens. Anything that James Harden does is often fodder because he's James Harden, right? One of those kind of lightning rod kind of guys.
And I don't really – do much Twitter anymore because it's just a bad place.
I'm sad to say.
Not that I haven't used it even today. I think I texted a tweet to someone, but it's pretty rare that I trust almost anything on there anymore. And I know who to follow, you know, what's authentic and not. But the comments and everything is just, it's insane. It's nothing like it used to be.
It's turned into a hellscape. It really, really has. And it's just... You know, again, it's more emblematic of the larger society that we live in, right? I mean, just look around and it's not good. It's just not good. I wanted to give MPJ a shout out, David. Since the All-Star break, 20 points a game, 55, 44, 92 shooting. Look, and he, if you look at him on defense this year, you know, look, he will not be anybody's All-NBA first team defender. However, much more engaged, know where he's supposed to be, knows how to be a good team and help defender. if he is doing the things he's doing offensively and able to continue that, I mean, look, this team won the championship last year. But if he is that, you know, legit solid, because remember in the finals, he wasn't very good. I think he had one game where, like the clinching game maybe, where finally some shots started to fall. But he's grabbing rebounds, doing, to your point,
right,
what do we have to do to win possessions?
Yeah, that's right, right. That's right. Yep.
But if he becomes that consistent person, well, now, good luck now.
Denver is rounding into form. I think everyone can see that now. And yes, we'll talk about them at the end of the show. They can't just rely on Jokic or the Jokic-Murray combination. Mm-hmm. KCP's got to do his thing. Aaron Gordon will always do his thing.
Right.
And MPJ is the hardest one to do because he's got to make shots really elevate them. But if he's locked in, I always believe you do all the other things to the best of your ability, I think your shooting tends to come around better.
Yeah. And it is amazing how when the shooting does it, all of a sudden it'll amp them up on the other end, right? They'll compete harder on D. They'll fight. I'm sure you see it as a coach all the time. You're like, funny how that works, right? Like, you feel good. You feel good about yourself, right? Yeah, but that's falling. I'm feeling great.
I teach it. If basketball is a game of feelings and rhythm. And if you get caught up missing shots and that affects you, you're going to keep missing shots and maybe play worse defense and not rebound. So I switch it around. That's when you double down on defense and setting better screens and racing to get loose balls and whatever to get like, I'm playing pretty good here. I just think it lightens the mood up a little bit to make more shots. You could always have a teammate throw you the ball and contest it like Harden did. But more commonly, the other ways to get yourself going is just play good basketball and hopefully the shot comes around.
And I think this is, you wrote about it. This is what Tyrese Halliburton needs to do, right? And it's unfortunate because defense is not his calling card, clearly.
No, but he is trying harder and he played well. He played good last night. It's not rocket science. When he plays really good, they're a much better offensive team. I did a show last night for the Pacers, and
nice.
I told them it's called Setting the Pace. I told them, we can we can put a microscope on whatever you want, but Halliburton sucks. The offense kind of sucks. So, when he's rolling, they can really be a great offense, not just because of him. So, I still think though what you're saying is right. He's got to take pride in screen setting, one-on-one transition defense, half-court defense, not turn the ball over, which he has often been elite at. Most of the year, he is. It's like anyone. And for MBJ, he can be absent-minded. So when he's locking in on his jumper and executing their plan defensively, they're a hell of a team.
They sure are. Yeah, can't wait to see them lock in for the postseason. A number of these teams, I want to see how Oklahoma City responds. The young kids in year one, how Minnesota does. Well, listen, one thing I know is Ant's going to be ready come playoff time. I don't know what's going to happen, but I know he's a dude that he has lots of self-confidence and belief on both ends of the floor. And listen, that matters in this league, right? If you don't believe, no shot. So that's pretty awesome. We mentioned at the top of the show, March Madness is here. And I, in my younger days, and I always like to say this around Dave because he's like, what are you trying to say? But in my younger days, this was a holiday for me, right? Okay, when I was in college, all right, no class, going to go watch the games. When I was young in my work career, how do I schedule meetings out of the office so I can be watching it? Admittedly, now I do not follow it as I used to, or really at all. But it's a big day, and it's a huge sporting event, and alumni and fans and everybody really kind of gets excited into the start of today and tomorrow. First rounds of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, 12:15, I think, Mississippi State, Michigan State's first tip, and so I have a similar story as you. The NCAA tournament. I mean, I remember U.S. Reed for Arkansas hitting a half-court shot at the buzzer to beat Louisville. I remember Danny Ainge at BYU. I think it beat DePaul, maybe in 81. I was 16. My school got done right around noon because we had such a big school. We had two sessions. So I was in the morning session as a basketball player. But once our season was over, which is normally late February, I came home in March. I was home at noon every day. So I could watch the opening round, and I'm 15 years old. I'm watching first rounds. They only had one channel back then. Now it's I'm going to have all five TVs cooking today at some point in my
office.
You're
aging yourself, David.
Yeah. Yeah. So, right. So in college, same thing. I stopped really following it until I would go to Vegas with my brother's fantasy tournament, but and I'd watch them, but they gambled the game, so they'd really be into it. I didn't really care so much. But I have four players that I help that are playing. I've got friends that are head coaches, friends that are assistant coaches. So I have a rooting interest in a lot of people. But the reason why I want to mention it is I do one bracket a year. I stopped doing brackets for years. I just would follow my son's bracket because he would do it when he was like 8, 9, 10, whatever he was. When he started, maybe a little more than that, maybe 10, 11. Now I do one, only one. I don't know how many he does. But I think he does one also now. And he called me or he texted me earlier. He sent me a picture of who you got in the final four or whatever. We're not competitive that way. I root for my friends. So does he. He's got friends all over the place too. Mm-hmm. Coaches that he's worked with that are in it now. But it's one of our love languages for sure. You know, we love this. And I love that he loves the game and wants to make a career out of it as I have. And there is, one of my players didn't expect to make the tournament. All my other ones did. What a great feeling. He plays tomorrow. What a great feeling it is for them. I remember I've coached players way back when they were high school kids of mine that made the tournament or made even the Final Four. It's a special time if you love basketball. It really is. Yep. I don't know like people like John Calipari complaining that don't expand the field. I got no problem expanding the field. I had four NBA games on last night or G League games, and I had Wagner playing Grambling State and Colorado Boise State. I had the other games on the night before. I don't mind doing an NCAA tournament having more play-in type stuff. It's a cool thing. Yeah. I don't think it's going to dilute anything. I really don't.
Right.
And I also think it's also a reminder of just how similar a lot of these players are. And it makes me appreciate their NBA players. Our guys are the best in the world. They're most committed, the most talented, take care of the bodies, the whole thing, the smartest very often. Because there are a whole bunch of good players in these games. You're going to see some 16s play number one seeds to the buzzer and 15 versus two and whatever. And the guys that bubble through all of that and make it in our league and stick, they're really special.
And also the players, David, who... This is the pinnacle of their basketball career.
Yep.
Look, to make it to Division I basketball and play an NCAA tournament ain't no small feat, right? That's not, it isn't like millions of people can say they've done that. That's not a thing, right? So, you know, kudos to everyone out there, all the players and coaches and staff and everybody. And this is a holiday, it's a special time of year. So congrats to everybody. All right, David, as we wrap here, top five. I don't think our top five has changed much, but we'll see.
Yeah,
who's on your five line?
I've got one change. So okay. I decided to pass on number five because no one deserves it. But then I decided, one team deserves it. I'm going to give it to Coach Udoka's team. 8-2 of their last 10. They're not the fifth best team. It's an honorary award for caring. When they really don't have to care. They've got Shangun's out. They've got a nice future, but they are not, and they're not playing great teams. They beat a couple good teams in that stretch, but they're a good example of this is how it's supposed to work, and they're building good habits for the future.
And that's the key, and that's what Udoka has brought in there, and we knew that would happen from the jump. And you see it when they play, when you watch them play before. I mean, Houston was, you knew it was going to be a disaster. Jalen Green doing Lord knows what. Nobody trying on defense. Like, none of that. This team competes to the end. I'm telling you, they're going to be all right. Pelicans remained on my five line. Who's on your four line?
They are my number four.
Wolves are on my four line. They probably dropped out for you because of the cat stuff and everything else. All right. Who's on your three line?
Oh, it's the same as yours.
Okay. Thunder, Nuggets, Celtics.
High five. Yeah,
those are the teams.
Yeah. I almost could do just Denver versus Boston. Now we're a month away from the playoffs even starting, and lots can happen even after that. But right now, we are trending to me towards a Denver versus Boston. Maybe it was always that way, but I think it's very much that way now.
Let's play that out in the East. I think you're right. I'm pretty positive. I really can't see any East team, and that includes Milwaukee, who I've not been high on at all season.
Minus beating health,
minus injuries, yes, like, which of course, way, which is always
a lot of, yeah, we have a lot of games right. left. Yeah,
but assuming that everybody's healthy, four out of seven, I don't
Boston's
see it.
Boston's the best team.
In the West, yes, Denver are defending champs. I do wonder about plucky Minnesota. I wonder about OKC, the Pelicans, and the Pelicans, because we've talked about this. Zion, because of that elasticity with him, he could be the best player in a series. And then you're like, shit, now what? Right? Like,
I like them even better. They're more experienced. Not that much more, but more experienced than the Thunder, for sure.
For sure.
And Minnesota without Cat, I just don't know what to make of them. Jalen McDaniels has been okay. Edwards is spectacular. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the Pelicans are interesting, but to beat Denver, the way Denver's playing right now, without a bench even, that starting five is just too special.
Clippers, you give them a chance?
Not as currently constructed, but if you ask me, do I think they'll be much better in the postseason? I do. I do think they'll get going again. And I will tell you from my sources inside there, Paul George is going nowhere. He's just the guys always agents are building leverage to make sure they get the most money possible. Mm-hmm. But I think he's going to be set in LA. And so I think we're going to see the Clippers get better. But I've lost the belief that they're going to be able to beat Denver when I used to believe that. I don't believe that anymore.
Yeah, and I think, you know, from the play-in region, Dallas, I mentioned because of the Luka Kyrie thing, but they don't guard, so I worry about them. And then, look, I love Phoenix's three-headed attack, but they've been so inconsistent as a team. And then it's the rest of the team, right? Okay, those three, but are we going to really count on Eubanks? Are we really going to count on Nurk? Are we really going to count on – I mean, Grayson Allen, by the way, has been fantastic
shooting
this season.
So
best three-point shooter in the league by far on volume. But, you know, can they – you know,
defensively, it's a problem, but you do make up a good point. It is within the realm of possibility because of the talent of those teams. It's not like there's no way they could do it. There's a way. It's just not likely. Let's hope. Let's hope for a lot of six and seven game series, but we got a ways to go before we get there.
We do, for sure. All right, guys, enjoy the weekend, and we will see you on Monday. Take care.